Welcome, everyone. You're listening to Paradigm Shifters. It's a show we've been running for quite a few years now, bringing forward some people that are making a difference on the planet. And you're really going to enjoy this fellow today. This is Peter Forehand, and he has created, invented an amazing light machine which radiates light, which is literally helping people reverse Alzheimer's. And that's not all it does. So we want to talk to Peter about who he is, how did he start this? Oh my gosh, what are some of the results you're getting? And welcome to the show, Peter.
Thank you for having me, Veronica. I'm really excited to talk about this in kind of a longer form. So thank you for today.
Yeah, I'm really excited about it because just, you know, my partner saw it at CES, okay, and it really has, his macular degeneration has not gone back to where it was since his first treatment. You know, it's not just for Alzheimer's, this is for a lot of different things. So I wanted to talk to you, find out how did you get involved in this? Who are you anyway? And what are some of the goals you have? And what are some of the stumbling blocks? And are you excited about how it's going? So you're on, Peter.
Wonderful. Yeah, well, so again, thanks for having me.
I'm delighted.
I'll definitely get through. Mm-hmm. the story of what led to Sunflower is both very interesting and is especially important. The context of how it evolved is also kind of the same story that I think, you know, I was a year and a half ago, I was as skeptical and as ignorant to the impact of light on the human body as most everyone currently is.
But you're a scientist, and then, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I graduated from the University of Michigan in 2018 with a degree in material science and materials engineering. Materials. Yeah. So it wasn't light specific. I had a couple of classes regarding quantum physics and kind of light mechanics, but nothing that was too applicable or really even that interesting. So I was exposed a little bit to the science and physics of light, or in this case, more accurately, electromagnetic radiation. But it wasn't until after graduating that I began to be sort of independently enthusiastic about light. And so, in fact, my first experiences with light, I was trying to design a water-free, chemical-free laundry machine. So I was actually using very high doses of UVC light to rapidly sanitize and deodorize clothing without the need for a washer and dryer.
Wow. What a brilliant idea. Was that one of your innovations right there?
It was. And it was one of those kind of classic organic stories, and that I was walking home in a very light rain. And I kind of had the thought of like, man, I have to do laundry today, but I don't have 12 quarters and my clothes aren't really that dirty, but I do need to clean them because there's not really a better way. And as I was walking home, I was kind of thinking about how, you know, how is it 2019 at this time? And we don't have better means of cleaning our laundry than soaking them in water and then soaking them in chemicals and then drying that water off. And so I started thinking about other ways that you could clean textiles. And two thoughts emerged. One was the thought of, you know, when you lay out clothing in the sun, like in a desert, for example, it's going to get blasted by sunlight and by UV, and that's going to kill all the germs. And oftentimes that's going to remove a lot of the odor as well.
Right.
And I was thinking, is there a way you can kind of concentrate down what would be happening from sunlight exposure down into an artificial form that you could have the same amount of energy that you might find in a week of leaving it outside, but be concentrated down to sort of 60 to 90 seconds. And what I found is that you could actually buy devices online that were UVC light bulbs that would output a very high amount of germicidal ultraviolet light.
Wow.
That served two big purposes. And one of those was the direct impact of UVC light on bacteria, kind of blasting apart their DNA and making the bacteria unable to multiply, rendering them sterile and therefore dead. And the second thing is that with a very specific wavelength of UVC light, you can actually split oxygen, split the bond of oxygen, creating free oxygen radicals.
Hmm.
And then those free oxygen radicals recombine with oxygen, forming ozone, O3. And ozone is a wonderful cleaning agent, a dangerous gas, but a wonderful cleaning agent for the same reason.
Hmm.
And so what I through kind of both a recreational but also a diligent clinical review, mm-hmm. Is I found that you could use certain wavelengths of light to create ozone, and then you could use certain wavelengths of light to break down ozone back into oxygen. And so I kind of started concepting a machine that would clean clothing through two mechanisms. One would be the direct impact of the light on the textile, mm-hmm. and the other would be the production of ozone from the oxygen within the machine itself that could then be broken back down to fresh, clean, safe oxygen. Wow. Through a different wavelength of light.
Let me ask
light.
You a question. Isn't an ozone yeah. machine helpful for cleaning up toxic smells and stuff in a basement
Absolutely.
Or whatever?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So a great example of how they currently use ozone mm-hmm. is sort of NHL players' hockey equipment, their pads, their jerseys that have, you know, if you've worked with hockey, you know, an incredible odor at all times. The way they clean those professional equipment is they put them in a chamber and they pump it full of ozone.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
And then they let the ozone react with the bacteria and the odors and the toxins. And then they wait until all the ozone is dissipated. And then the clothing is sterile and the odor is then eliminated.
How long does it take it to dissipate?
So the current methods that are the sort of the traditional methods of ozone, it takes quite a bit of time for it to dissipate because they're basically letting this half-life of ozone, which is about 30 minutes, quickly happen. And so they're waiting for the ozone to dissipate through sort of normal natural means. Mm-hmm. But what I was trying to build was a thing that could do that in a few minutes.
Okay.
And I found that by adding another wavelength of UVC light that shares the energy of the bond of ozone, you could thereby break ozone down significantly faster. And so the way that I designed this laundry machine was that it would achieve a kind of a 25 parts per million of ozone, so a very high amount of ozone in just about 10 seconds through UVC exposure. And then in about 90 seconds, I could break down that 25 parts per million of ozone back down to zero, rather than waiting for the ozone itself to naturally degrade. And so what I started to do is I found ozone detectors online. I started building prototypes. I started building, you know, these different UVC bulbs. And I began out of a 5-gallon bucket in the spring of 2019. And over the course of the summer, I had went through 7 different prototype iterations. And the 7th prototype was a device that incorporated a grow tent that you might use in your home, so kind of in a mylar lined kind of closet looking
okay.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I would hang my clothing in there, use a UVC bulb, a couple of different types of UVC bulbs to have this reaction. And then by using a very sensitive ozone detector, I was able to start graphing the ozone production and the subsequent degradation of ozone inside this sort of airtight chamber.
Hmm.
And I was finding that I could get it to sterile levels in about 15 seconds. And then I could reduce that ozone back down to 0 parts per million in about 90 more seconds. And kind of armed with these insights, is I then walked into a startup incubator in Ann Arbor with my laundry machine in tow. And I was like, hey,
good for
I'd
you.
Like to be, hey, yeah, thank you. I was like, I'd like to be like incubated. I'd like to get a grant, you know, this and that. And so I kind of gave the director of this incubator my spiel. I showed him how it worked. I walked him through the data that I had created with sort of the ozone graphs. And then they awarded me a grant within 48 hours of seeing the machine. I got a grant. And that was kind of the first bit of investment that led to everything today. And of course, this is very different than Sunflower. this is the first thing that I built that utilized light in kind of a unique way.
Okay. So and that was a laundry machine, right? We're being specific.
That
here.
Was a laundry machine. So this is fall 2019,
okay.
Building this laundry machine out. Mm-hmm. And so after getting that grant, I started to use that grant money to do some of the foundational IP of the system.
Mm-hmm.
And in writing the IP and working with a patent attorney and all that good stuff is I began to raise and tried to answer a lot of questions. One of the things that people would always ask me is like, could you sit in there and clean your body? And, you know, I'd kind of laugh and be like, well, you could, but, you know, it's really dangerous and it would blast your skin apart with this high powered UVC light. But then I began to think about it and I was like, well, how dangerous would it be? You know, like you would clean your body, and if it wasn't that dangerous, it would be a very useful process. And so I kind of became obsessed with that thought of like, how can I quantify the level of danger that would happen?
Mm-hmm.
And is is there a sweet spot where you could clean the body without having any negative impact on the skin? And this led me down a really interesting rabbit hole. and that was finding out what doses, a dose being the overall amount of energy received of light, what amount of dose a body could receive to have a germicidal effect on the skin surface while not having any negative and either acute or chronic lasting damage to the skin cell.
How long did it take you to find that?
Yeah. So within a few weeks, I found a bunch of really interesting stuff. So this is about November 2019.
Okay.
And one of the things that became very clear very quickly is that the current regulatory limits as they exist governing UVC exposure, called threshold limiting values, the doses that they were saying were unsafe compared to the doses that the science were saying was unsafe was about 100 times different, in that the regulations were 100 times below what the scientific limits actually were for having skin damage. And I was like, oh, wow, there's a big opportunity here, because
you need to tell me that they were giving you low numbers when it actually could have been a much higher number. Is that right?
Exactly. And okay. The reason the numbers were wildly low is a whole hour interview in of itself. But in a sentence, basically, there was a study completed back in 1980s, a case report that was done that was evaluating a UVC light induced sunburn in a medical facility.
Okay.
And they went in and the nurses were complaining about sunburn and eye damage. And they went in and they measured stuff and they made a ruling about threshold limiting values. And then a few months later, they realized the machinery they had been evaluating was malfunctioning and was actually emitting 100 times the amount of UVC than intended.
Oh, wow.
Dangerous. So this is really interesting. Exactly. And so they went back and updated this case report, but the threshold limiting values that came as a result of this case report were never updated. And so, like, I started to see all this data, and then I stumbled across that, and I'm like, this is a clerical error that the threshold limiting values are so low. This isn't even like a scientific error. This is like we just need to update it from a pure point of they've never gone back to the case report by which these values are based and updated it. Anyway, so one of the things I became focused on is, okay, well, one of the major ways to make this safe to the body is by recognizing that certain parts of the body have different levels of UV exposure that are safe.
So oh, really?
Our eyes are much more sensitive than our hands. And our hands are much less sensitive than our lower back. And basically, the more, the thicker that the dead skin cell layer that surrounds your body is, called the stratum corneum, the more you kind of have a shield to the UVC exposure. And so what I saw is that the hands themselves had the best ability to block UVC-induced damage. And I was like, oh, well, hey, if the hands are extra protective against UVC light, and the number one thing we focus on cleaning, you know, in a public setting are our hands, then maybe instead of trying to build a full body UVC cleaning bath, maybe I just build a UVC light hand cleaner. And once I started thinking about building a UVC light hand cleaner, I became quite obsessed with that idea and what that form factor would need to look like to do that in a way that was consistent and safe and scalable.
Is it like a flashlight?
So it ended up becoming I developed a ring, so a circle that called Halo.
Okay.
And this was a circle that had, that you would put your hands inside the middle of the circle.
Oh, okay.
And then there would be a uniform light output from that circle that would only be contained within the ring itself. And I was able to achieve this really interesting sort of planar output of light by having a unique and patent pending means of focusing light into a sort of a 2D parallel plane, without the use of any lenses or any lenses, because one of the things that I had to work around is that UVC light is blocked by most materials. It has a very short penetration depth, so I couldn't use glass or plastic as a means of focusing the light. So I developed this a thing that I called a Fibonacci focusing array, but it was basically a spiral pattern that used aluminum to reflect the light in such a way that it created sort of this planar output within the ring itself. And this allowed you basically to have an open concept light output that was limiting in an extreme way from exiting the ring itself. So that it didn't impact your eyes, the rest of your body. It would only be impacting the skin within the ring. And so that was a cool, novel, effective ways of achieving hand cleaning that I began developing at the end of 2019. And was also discussing, you know, anyone that would listen to me, I would talk about how we could use UVC light to kill germs in seconds without the use of, you know, the need for water or chemicals or alcohol. And at this point, you know, in 2019, no one really cared that much. They were like, well, our methods are good enough and germs aren't a huge worry.
So
but I worked on, I wasn't saved. I worked on this for a few more months, you know, independently in my apartment by myself, building out Halo and the accompanying website. And then of course, March 13th, 2020 comes around and suddenly everyone that I'd spoken with the last, you know, 5 or 6 months were like, hey, we care about germs a lot more now. And we care about hygiene and cleanliness and these things a whole lot more now that we are, you know, now that we're living in these pandemic times. And so at that point, I was able to sort of quickly onboard a team, get investments together, get our prototypes built. And that really accelerated the growth of Halo and getting this product from a concept in December 2019 to a fully functional prototype by August of 2020.
Did you have a whole group of people in the bath together?
Exactly. So we didn't all sit in the same bath together, but we began doing a lot of studies on Halo itself. And one of those studies that we did at the end of March 2020 was we directly compared hand washing with soap and water to hand sanitizer, to hand washing with only water to Halo. And what we found is that Halo would consistently remove above 99% of bacteria in a few seconds.
Wow.
Whereas even the best results with hand washing and soap and water would at best would get about 80% and on average would get about 50%. And alcohol or hand sanitizers would typically get between 90 and 95%. But with all the negatives that come with rubbing ethanol on your skin. And so with this data it was a very, very clear visual indication of how effective Halo was with a fraction of the resources and a fraction of the time. And of course, with a very high safety profile, because we knew the true threshold limiting values and they were completely different than what the regulations said. So basically no major corporations were working on a device like this because it was kind of like what we were building was, you know, quote unquote illegal because we were dosing people with a higher limit than what the regulations said, but the regulations themselves were wrong and our team understood that and knew that.
Well, just a sec. I want to get really grounded here and say, now look, what are you applying to people? How are you testing it out? Like I was teasing, say, is it like a flashlight or what?
yeah. So the way this experiment works, the way that Halo works is that you would put your hands up in front of it. It would sense your hands with infrared sensors, and then it would turn on the light for a set period of time as you passed your hands all the way through the ring and then all the way back out of the ring.
Okay.
And as you were passing your hands through this, you were receiving a very specific dose of light per square centimeter.
Okay.
In our case, it's about 10 millijoules of UVC light per square centimeter.
Okay.
And at this time, the threshold limiting value for an eight hour period was 6 millijoules. And so we were overdosing people compared to TLVs. But we were well beneath the actual limit of when human hands would be impacted on a DNA level.
So nobody was getting burned or anything,
Exactly. And in fact, you could use the device 25 plus times before you would have any observable skin reaction, skin erythema. So what we call kind of a visual sunburn. And importantly, in the case of UVC, is a visual sunburn will always precede any deeper damage because the penetration depth of UVC at this wavelength was only a few microns, and the thickness of our stratum corneum was about 20 microns, basically saying that all of the UVC light was dissipated in the dead skin cell layer of our body before it impacted a living cell. And therefore all the things on the surface could be blasted apart by light but no living skin cells would be impacted in the ranges that we were using with the wavelength and the overall dose. And the way that we looked at the efficacy is we would take people's hands and we'd swab them with a cotton swab in a, you know, formal sterile environment, put that onto an agar plate, like a petri dish. And then they would do their hand cleaning technique, hand washing, et cetera, a Halo. And then we'd swab their hands again and put on another dish. And then by comparing the bacterial colonies After 24 hours of growth, we were able to get very objective comparisons of present bacteria at both points. And it's kind of the standardized way you do testing.
See whether it regrows or anything like that. Right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So before we go too far past this, I would like you to please explain a little bit about the frequencies like far infrared. What is, or a little bit about the lights.
Absolutely. So all light, when I use the word light in these contexts, are going to be all are photons of a varying wavelength.
Okay.
So at this point, we were using UVC in the wavelength of 254 and 265 nanometers.
Okay.
For example, blue light is about 400 to 450 nanometers. Green light's about 500 to 550 nanometers. Yellow light, about 600 nanometers. Red light, 600 and above. And then infrared light begins at about 800 nanometers and then goes on for a while, until a few thousand nanometers. After that, you then have microwaves.
Okay.
So far infrared light would be infrared closer to microwave, which would be several thousand nanometer wavelengths. Near infrared light would be kind of 800 to 1,000 nanometers. In this case, UVC light is a photon with a wavelength of 200 to 280 nanometers, and we were using 254 and 265.
Mm. How did you find out what are the ideal light waves?
So a combination of things, which would be sort of reading clinical studies that have used UVC for the purposes of doing germ killing and seeing what they used, both in a, you know, both in a health environment as well as kind of in a physics environment too.
Okay.
A lot of this technology has actually been used for decades, for water filtration cleaning, for room cleaning, for really every type of cleaning without human skin involved.
Oh, okay. So we've had a sauna, far infrared sauna.
Yeah, yeah. And I am a big advocate for infrared saunas as well, which will become sort of a topic as I talk about sunflower. And so, in fact, it's funny you ask that, because the first thing that turned me in, onto red light and near infrared light, which is what sunflower uses, is during this period of prototyping and development, I began to think like, oh, how long has this been around? How is this used? And one of the things that I found is that actually the Nobel laureate from 1903, a scientist named Niels Finsen, won the Nobel Prize in medicine for using UVC light on the skin to treat lupus vulgaris incredibly successfully.
Wow.
Yeah. And I saw this and I'm like, hold on a minute. Like, the things that are currently regulatorily prohibited were used 120 years ago for a skin surface level disease. And it won the Nobel Prize. And so I was like, I should probably read this guy's work because that seems relevant to what I'm doing now.
Well, hang on. You said lupus vulgaris? What did you say?
Lupus vulgaris was the disease that he was treating in 1903.
With P.
Which is different than lupus as we know it today.
Okay.
But at that time, that's what it was called.
Okay.
And I was like, well, I should read this guy's work because, you know, he invented the 254 nanometer bulb as part of his accolade, the one that we were actually using in this experiment. So I felt really connected in that way.
Okay.
And so what I did is I found his journal online. I ordered a copy of you know, all of his work bound into a book.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got that book delivered. And it's, to date, my favorite book that I own. It's called Phototherapy by Niels Finsen.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought this book expecting to learn all about UVC light and, you know, the subjects of it. And I started reading, and on page one, paragraph one, he says, I've stumbled across a novel means of treatment for smallpox, of which I have successfully cured 151 of 152 patients.
Wow.
And that cure is red light therapy.
Wow.
Phototherapy. And I'm just like, what? Wait, huh? This is not what I expected to be reading about. And so actually reading.
Well, that's really exciting.
Journal,
isn't it? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And reading his journal was my first exposure to red light and near infrared light. And immediately I was hooked because I'm like, hey, here's the guy who won the Nobel Prize for UVC light. And 7 years before he won the Nobel Prize, he had created a safe and effective treatment for smallpox, which is a disease that we currently don't have any safe and effective treatments for. And I was like, hold on, this seems like a thing I need to know intimately if I'm going to be the light guy and know all about the physics of light. And so I read his book, a quick book, I mean, like a wonderful journal. And he has a wonderful writing prose. I recommend phototherapy to everyone.
Okay.
And so I began to read it. I saw what he was talking about. He was filtering sun rays to achieve this effect because red and near infrared LEDs didn't exist yet. Mm-hmm. And he had absolutely amazing results on smallpox and on other diseases. And I was like, okay, if he was doing this 120 years ago, then like, where is that technology now? Like,
exactly.
Why have I never heard about this when I've spent a year and a half of my life learning about the biophysics of light on the human body?
And it wasn't even mentioned, eh?
And it wasn't exactly. And this is my through college and through, you know, being like health and through every popular bit of culture and media. I had never heard about phototherapy. And in this case, specifically red and near infrared light.
Hmm.
And so I began kind of looking at this technology and through a different lens now. Initially, I was like, okay, well, what Neil Simpson described is that if we can combine red and UVC light, we can also mitigate the impact and the danger of UVC light on human skin exposure. And the theory that I created an experiment and a technology for was that we could heal skin cells faster than even high doses of UVC light exposure could damage them. And kind of armed with this theory of combining red, near infrared, and UVC light into a technology that we now call rainbow UV,
mm-hmm.
Is that we could create skin-safe germicidal light at all doses, not just at the specific doses that we were applying for the hand, thereby kind of turning this whole thing on its head, where not only is it not dangerous, but from a pure quantifiable metric point of view, it can leave your skin cells healthier than before you use the UVC light.
Wow. Is that because it generates new cellular stuff or what?
Exactly. So red and near infrared light increase the microcirculation of blood to the cells.
Okay.
It directly reduces the inflammation of the cells. It stimulates the mitochondria and increases ATP output of the cell.
Okay.
And about a dozen other processes.
Wow.
The coolest one has to do with water and how water near hydrophilic surfaces can absorb light and turn from H2O into H3O2, which is a hexagonal form of water. That's okay. One of the major means of storing energy in our body, period.
Okay.
That's my favorite mechanism, which I will discuss in this call. But in the case of UVC exposure, it basically has the exact opposite effect of the ways that UVC harms you, damaging DNA, causing an increase in nitric oxide inside the mitochondria, stuff like that, is red light directly impacted and can directly reverse. And so sort of armed with this theoretical application of mixing these wavelengths of light, I was able to secure a major investment from a Japanese conglomerate named Asahi Kasei.
Okay.
And I shared this idea with them. I made a PowerPoint about how I thought this might work and all this other stuff. And I was able to secure a major investment from them to run the experiment.
Wow.
And in the process of defining how to mix these wavelengths to achieve this effect is I began just seeing that, oh, for the same reasons that red and near infrared light can prevent and reverse sunburn,
mm-hmm.
Red and near infrared light are being used all over the world right now, currently, to reverse degenerative diseases safely and extremely effectively.
Wow. Isn't that good to know, hey?
Exactly. And so this process, this medicinal use of red light, is now called photobiomodulation. So
I love that word. Light. It's so exciting.
Yeah. And that word's a big deal because for the last few decades, there's been a lot of different terms that this practice has been called,
mm-hmm.
from low-level laser therapy to light therapy to phototherapy. We have now combined a lot of these terms into photobiomodulation with some big, important work by some top experts in the country, including Dr. Praveen Arani, who's one of the original ones that coined the term and is now currently one of my favorite people to interface with.
Oh, wow. Really?
And so now we have this term as kind of a catch-all, this photobiomodulation, mm-hmm. which is using very precision forms of wavelengths and overall dosages of red and infrared light to have very precision effects upon the body, whether that's sunburn healing or Alzheimer's reversal or AMD reversal, or even things like osteoporosis, depression, anxiety, plantar fasciitis. really anything characterized by a degeneration of the cell. So not a thing that's attacking our body externally, but our kind of our body or our cells kind of withering internally. Anything that that's characterized by, red and infrared light, is a safe and effective treatment for. And I was stunned by this because I had, you know, this is, that's a big claim.
Yeah, really,
and I had never heard about this in medicine, and I'd never heard about this in physics or in science or even in my industry, which at this point was UVC light.
Hmm. You think they're afraid to talk about it? Like it's about aging, isn't it? In a way.
It's great in anti-aging, both on an aesthetic form and on literal microscopic DNA telomere form on anti-aging, which is a very exciting avenue of science.
Exactly.
And what I've found is that it's less about, it mostly seems to stem from just ignorance of photobiomodulation. So not really anyone's like fault. And I don't really even sense any malintent of its suppression.
Okay.
It's just like no one's aware of it, mostly because it's so easy to dismiss. And it sounds way too good to be true. You know, we're talking about using a form of energy directed to the body without any negative side effects that can reverse diseases like dementia without side effects. And that's, you know, that's already been done. That's clinically evaluated in the US, in China, in Brazil, all over the world. But yet still really no one's talking about it.
Exactly. So nobody's talking about it. That's for sure.
Exactly. And so at the end of this is now the end of 2021. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of like learning all of this. I'm seeing the word photobiomodulation for the first time. And I'm like, okay, well, if the science is true and it's already having results on things like dementia and cancer, then surely it should be being applied all over the world. But it's not. So like, what's the holdup? Like, why is it not? Because the science is extremely valid, and yet I've never heard of it. And kind of in systematically answering that question, if this is true, then where is it? Mm-hmm. We kind of, as a team, we pivoted from UVC light to focusing on photobiomodulation.
Okay.
And in systematically answering that question, we began to build Sunflower. And so a lot of these things that we found, so for example, only very recently have LEDs, light emitting diodes, so kind of microchips that emit light.
Yeah.
Only very recently have they become good enough, inexpensive enough, high enough power output to be biologically relevant in a way that everyone can afford them. So a decade ago, Sunflower would have cost us $10,000 to build. And today it costs us a couple $100s to build. And that's
wow,
just because LEDs progress so rapidly.
Mm.
Yeah. So in the same way that processing power is governed by a law called Moore's Law, that sort of defines the exponential growth of processing power. LED improvement is defined by a law called Haight's law, which is also an exponential law that basically says LEDs get 200 times better per decade, generally speaking, which is a very exciting time right now because now LEDs are so powerful that we can build devices like Sunflower that make all of the things that are being done in medical clinics and hospitals all over the world, we can now do that safely and quickly at home with
That's
inexpensive
incredible.
Devices.
Well, just let's back up for a second. You said something's
Absolutely.
Law. Did you say Haight's law or whose law?
Yep. H-A-I-T-Z. Haight's
I-T-Z.
Law.
I-T-Z.
It's
okay.
The,
I thought it
Moore's
said Haight's,
law
but
of
I wasn't
LED.
Sure. Okay.
Yep.
Great.
And so that was one of the major things that we found. It's like, okay, so the timing is good because now LEDs are affordable.
Mm-hmm.
We also found that one of the most interesting things that we found is that all these specific disciplines of science were already applying photobiomodulation. So, for example,
really?
Dermatologists were very aware of red light for aesthetics and wrinkles. And you see a lot of celebrities with like red light masks and red light products for wrinkles, which are very effective. And if you're looking for that, they do work. oncologists were having amazing results on red and infrared light on cancers. Physical therapists and chiropractors were applying it for chronic pain and for pain management, often in the form of lasers. And kind of all these different disciplines of science were having amazing results, but they're all very siloed in that they weren't really communicating across the disciplines. And so they're making progress on it, but they weren't really looking at the whole picture. They were only seeing their own discipline, and they weren't seeing that light was being used all across these. And so one of the things that we've done with Sunflower is we've built one device with one form factor that's modulated via software. So if you want to use sunflower for the brain, you select the brain application on the app, and that gives you a specific blend of light. Mm. And if you want to use sunflower for your knee pain, you select knee pain on the app, and that gives you a different blend of light. Okay. And so rather than having to have a product for your knee and one for your brain and one for your neck and one for your heel, et cetera, is we're able to build one device with a bunch of different software programs that automatically modulate the LED output to best match clinical parameters that have already been evaluated to be safe and effective forms of therapy.
Hmm.
And that was one of our bigger bits of intellectual property, and one of our bigger milestones was realizing that we now have the ability to produce software that can make LEDs sort of replicate clinical studies at home. And we no longer need to go to a medical clinic to get a very precision dose of light. We can use proximity sensors and software and pre-programming to provide very accurate forms of therapy right at home or right in a nursing home, as we focus on. And in sort of combining all of these insights as we began the early stages of developing what turned into Sunflower,
mm-hmm.
One of the other bits as well is you'll notice that the form factor of Sunflower and where the name came from is that all of the current sort of red light therapy devices
mm-hmm.
Were in a really sort of basic form factor. They were panels or boxes or pads, and they didn't really lend themselves to being that usable. If you wanted to use a big panel on your forehead, you have to like stack books up and you're gonna kind of balance it, and
sure.
and it's not the easy thing to do. And so one of the things I was trying to control for was to build a product and a means by which you could also have that be easy to position. And the kind of that accessibility of positioning became one of the big guiding criteria of
okay.
the product.
It's also kind of cute, Peter.
Exactly. Well, thank you. We do think the sort of both the friendly name and sort of the familiar name and form factor go a very long way.
And the fact that it's actually the national flower of the Ukraine.
Absolutely. Yeah. And sunflowers just have such positive connotations.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of bewildered in that there wasn't a brand that was really that strongly associated with sunflowers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me back up, because the name Sunflower kind of emerged. It's an interesting story. I sat on this question for January 2021, February 2021. And at the end of February, I was trying to figure out, you know, what this looked like, what this would be called. But I knew I wanted to build a photobiomodulation device that solved, you know, all these answers that our team had arrived at.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't yet have a name or a form factor. And so I sat down, just a blank piece of paper, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to draw what the ideal form factor would be. And so I drew a circle, and I put LEDs in a ring around that circle
okay.
so that I could have a consistent irradiance or rate of light exposure at a certain distance away. And I started sort of drawing what it would look like to have this ideal form. And then I looked at what I drew, and I was like, oh, that's a sunflower. I just drew a sunflower. and then as soon as the word sunflower appeared in my consciousness, I was like, oh, that is absolutely the name and our guiding principle and our name, you know, and a lot of things that have become kind of what the aesthetic and what the brand and what the feel are. We're really guided by the fact that it is literally a sunflower, and that we build our product, both our Gen 1 and our Gen 2, starting with looking at a sunflower, analyzing a sunflower, and trying to be as biomimicry and as, you know, as respectful to the nature that has already created such an amazing design.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of both where the form factor and the name originated from.
Wow.
yeah. And so now, armed with these insights and early software development and the name and the form factor, is we began the initial prototyping development. And during this time of doing prototyping development, we started getting very early iterations of device, so sort of red light therapy bulb, and providing them to our friends and family. And immediately I was absolutely blown away by how profound the results were. So for
really?
Example, my best friend, whose name is Joey, he had a bike accident 2 years prior
uh-huh.
and had been living with a post-surgical arthritic elbow
okay.
for about a year and a half. And his surgeon told him, you know, hey, you're gonna have to learn to live with that. You know, he couldn't do workouts. He had severe arthritic pain if he tried to use his elbow. And that was just his reality for a year and a half. When he started using the red light therapy, and he was only 24 years old. Exactly.
Oh my.
And that was a big thing, because we would do a lot of activities, and we'd play frisbee, and we'd bike, and we'd play sports. And a lot of that was now off the table for him, which was very sad. Hmm. And we gave him one of these red light therapy bulbs, and he began using it. And immediately there were huge impacts. Within a week, the pain was down almost fully. And within a month of consistent use, he no longer had any arthritic pain, even if he didn't use it that day.
And how do you use it? Did you say ball or bulb?
Bulb, yeah.
Okay.
So
yeah, okay.
This is one of the sort of the earliest prototype of what sunflower now is.
Okay.
And the way that he used this was pointing it at his, directly at the elbow, right where the arthritic pain was, mm-hmm. for about 10 minutes a day every morning. And that was it.
Wow.
And doing that consistently daily for a week and a month. And now he still does it every day. And this is kind of the first story where we were like, oh, wow, this really works. Like,
this is like real life
results. Minimum, yeah. If our only market for this is 20-year-olds with arthritic pain after a surgery, then this is still the most amazing thing ever. And so we started providing this to our manufacturing partners, friends and family, our friends and family. And we just started to see that same story happen all over the place. So we saw an 89-year-old mother with two chronically inflamed knees who canceled her knee surgery because the bulb was so effective. And her pain went down to pain level zero. We saw a mother of three who had severe hip pain, who went down to pain level zero within about a week of use. And it was just all these stories kind of kept happening, and we weren't expecting any of them. We were expecting them to happen, but not so quickly. Mm-hmm. And it's one thing to read about a clinical study where people go from an 8 level of pain down to a 0 level of pain out of 10. But to see that happen with friends and family really added a whole nother layer of this. Where we were like,
tell me about
wow,
tissue. Is it all bones and muscles and tissue?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So tissue, like you could do a facelift or a chin strengthener or something like that.
Yep. So exactly. So every cell of our body, from a skin cell to a bone cell to a muscle cell, can absorb red light,
okay.
and convert that to usable cellular energy.
Oh, wow.
A process, by definition, we synthesize energy from photons.
Okay.
And although no one's saying it yet, human cells are photosynthetic, as mm-hmm. every animal cell is photosynthetic.
Okay.
We don't create glucose from sunlight energy, but we do create ATP and electrical voltage from sunlight energy directly. Like, demonstrably, you can run that experiment at home on your body or in a lab. Every time, you'll find that our energy directly increases.
Do you think our overall energy in our body-mind increases over time? Do we become a high-frequency being? Is that
absolutely. And in fact,
oh,
this
really?
Is this leads kind of directly to what we are seeing today. And this is kind of one of my big things that I speak a lot about now. And this is probably the point in the talk that it's worth mentioning is for millions and millions of years, of course, you know, human beings, human organisms lived outside. We lived outside. We worked outside. We got a massive amount of solar exposure, and
okay.
our bodies started into an equilibrium where we could pull the solar exposure and use that to generate energy within our body. Energy from red light and infrared light, of course, but also energy and frequencies like UV light, blue light, green light, and yellow light as well. And this is fundamental to having both a healthy body and a mm-hmm. healthy spirit, as you mentioned, and spirit in a very physical connotation as well, being that of the electrical voltage of the body, which
okay.
is an incredibly important metric of our body that
okay.
we currently don't really pay too much attention to. And in the last few hundred years, we've, you know, moved inside, we work inside. Today, we spend 93% of our time indoors.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, we're getting 93% less solar radiation exposure than we
okay.
previously would be. And this has very pronounced negative impacts on the human body.
Hmm.
In the same way that you took a plant and put it inside and it began to wilt, you'd be like, oh, I need to get more sunlight to this plant.
Mm-hmm.
While human beings don't wilt like a plant does, we do wither, and we see very physical manifestations of chronic sunlight deprivation. And we see this as our skin paling and our cells becoming weaker and our hair falling out and not growing. And
well,
I
just want to say something about my own perspective, which is that I do healing energy work and readings, and you know that. Sometimes just walking by people, my energy will go way down. or way up. And I've been absolutely mesmerized by that through the years. I'm like, oh, aren't we interesting? We're vibrational vehicles of light.
Absolutely.
And you're helping me understand it in a more concrete way. Not concrete, but you know what I'm saying? It's very interesting.
Well, it absolutely is. And it's pretty interesting you say that because, you know, one of the most famous scientists of all time that everyone can quote his famous equation, of course, Einstein E equals MC squared. Mm-hmm. We've known for a very long time is that energy is equal to mass times, you know, the speed of light squared. And so the same thing that we call mass of our body is the very same thing that we call light energy and electromagnetic radiation, multiplied by this very, very large number, you know, so moving at a very different rate. But we absolutely, one can feel people's energy output, both in a very physical sense and in a very psychological sense. But in a very physical way is if you look at a human being through an infrared camera, we're a glowing ball of energy because we are constantly outputting heat and we're constantly outputting all forms of radiation. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, a really incredible study that was done relatively recently is that when a brain has a thought, that actually causes a distinct pattern of radiation that emanates from the brain that is not only in the brain. So you can actually measure a thought happening.
So is it in your arm, in your legs, or where is it?
It's even simpler than that. It's just a wave emanating out from the entire brain and being itself. In the same way that when you drop a pebble into water, you can see that wave propagate in all directions.
Sure,
easily.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's happening with every little thought that we have, even little tiny electrical impulses. Every time electricity is flowing and moving, that's also causing a wave to propagate in this regard. So you can absolutely feel people's emotion in a certain sense, as you described, when you're near people that have a very high energy or that are, you know, extremely happy, like you feel those same emotions and feelings, even subconsciously, well, you know, mostly subconsciously, but by noticing that on a subconscious level and kind of tuning into that, that's actually a very physical phenomenon that you are interacting with.
Mm-hmm. That's very exciting, isn't it? That you could explain it that
absolutely
well.
Is. Uh-huh. And this plays directly into light as well, because in a body, whether it's a human body or a mouse or a horse or a plant, if you're not receiving enough radiation from the sun, you are going to be a lower overall energy level. And I mean this in a very discrete definition of energy.
But that could be like your cut down on your brain potential or your regenerative potential. Oh boy.
Yeah. So for a cell to multiply and make a new cell and for new neurons to form, that cell has to first increase the voltage of the environment in a pretty significant way. Negative 25 millivolts for a normal cell, negative 50 millivolts for a cell that's about to proliferate and multiply. And if the body does not have enough literal electrical energy in it, then you're unable to have cell proliferation, or you're unable to heal wounds or flow blood effectively. So typically speaking,
or look pretty.
What's that?
I said, or look pretty.
Or look pretty, and exactly. And to have your hair be beautiful and silky and healthy, and your skin to be beautiful and acne free, and for your surface wounds to heal fast and effectively. And what we find is that typically speaking, the body knows if it's injured or it knows that it's sick, but it simply does not have enough energy to cause that repair. And when you can directly add energy to the system, in the case of this, you know, sunflower directly outputting red and infrared energy to your body, it has a systemic positive effect where your body can then have more energy, like literal pure energy, that can then direct that energy at places of the body that need more support to heal.
Okay.
So if you have a non-healing diabetic foot ulcer, it probably also means that you have really poor microcirculation to that area or capillary blood flow to that area, which means probably the skin around it is cold and that it's not healing and it maybe has been that way for weeks or months. And when you apply red and infrared light to that region, the cells increase in energy, the body in that area increases in blood supply, and then you see non-healing wounds recover in weeks or even in some cases within a week.
Well, what about the heart and the stomach and the liver? What about that sort of stuff?
Absolutely. So in lots of profound ways, you can see So in the case of the stomach, a great example is inflammatory bowel syndrome, IBS.
Okay.
And if you have inflammatory bowel syndrome, you have inflammation of the gut. And when you project infrared light at the gut, light directly and indirectly reduces inflammation. And so you can have, if you have a feeling of like a tight, painful gut from inflammation, mm-hmm. you can have pain relief within within just one 15-minute session.
Wow.
We have seen pain go down from an 8 to a 5.
Whoa.
In just one session. And that's directly because of inflammation being reduced.
Wow.
And what's amazing about light is it doesn't just reduce inflammation. It also provides energy to the system to heal the underlying damage causing the pain itself.
Wow.
So for example, if you're one of the many, many millions of Americans suffering from lower back pain, whether as a result of degenerative back discs or chronic inflammation in the back, is you can find some pretty amazing pain relief from sunflower and photobiomodulation because it reduces the inflammation very quickly. And it also provides the energy to the system to heal the degenerative underlying cause of the pain, whether that's degenerative bone or osteoporosis.
Stop osteoporosis, eh?
So photobiomodulation for osteoporosis is probably one of the most exciting medicinal advancements right now. Mm-hmm. And while we are not focusing on that initially as our initial go-to-market, which is Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. if we weren't doing Alzheimer's, we would be doing osteoporosis.
Okay. Well, seems the Alzheimer's is a pretty big, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, Alzheimer's we think is the most urgent from an unmet need standpoint. Mm-hmm. And also one of the simplest ways to explain photobiomodulation to the larger public is to say, hey, we're going to just get FDA approval for Alzheimer's. And when you hear about this crazy looking device, that's a sunflower earning FDA approval for Alzheimer's, and the eyes of the world turn to us and people are like, how does that work? And we say, well, your cells are photosynthetic and we synthesize energy from photons. And it's not just brain cells and severe Alzheimer's, but it's every single cell of your body, including every degenerative disease, is that when that's our response to the world's eyes turning to us, we know it's going to cause one, everyone's going to be like, there's no way that's true. If that were true, everything has to change. And then we're going to be like, yep, everything has to change because human beings do a literal process converting photons into energy.
Wow.
And so we are starting with Alzheimer's as a way of breaking that dam in a very big, worldwide publicity, obvious way. But as you and Bob have found, it also works for degenerative eye disease. And we've seen people who have increased their vision, whether it's from diabetes or from age-related effects, in a very profound way without negative side effects. Because once again, the eye cell, like every other cell of your body, can synthesize energy from light. And that has massive world-shifting implications.
Wow.
And once we realize how easy it is to apply those implications, then suddenly every disease that can be treated by light should first be treated with light before we try surgeries and drugs and any more of these invasive methods that we currently have as our kind of our standard of care.
Some are more destructive than you started off being. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, especially like cancer is a great example. It's like, well, let's cut the cancer out. It's like, well, let's first identify why that cancer developed and let's support the body and see if the body can turn those cancer cells back into healthy functioning cells. And in the case of photobiomodulation, we find that to be a very consistent effect, and which touches on how our paradigm of cancer is in about 90% of cases is quite off base. And we're looking at it as, from a genetic point of view, instead of the metabolic or mitochondrial point of view that we really need to be focusing on. And that's one of the things, of course, that light can have immense, immense effects on. So it's really exciting. I mean, we know because of what we've seen and the science and the clinicals that are already done, we know the world is going towards this.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, most people are unaware.
Mm-hmm.
And don't feel bad if you aren't, because I just got back from a 2-week trip in San Francisco talking to venture capitalists and med tech investors and healthcare investors. And even those groups, the first time they had ever heard the word photobiomodulation was me saying it to them. And I'm just like, how is it possible that I'm like, great. I guess I'm glad this is the first time you're hearing about it, but like, it's pretty incredible that there's, I need to step back and touch on the most incredible thing I haven't discussed yet,
okay,
which is all of the science is great. And now through the diligent, amazing humanitarian efforts of a scientist and a dentist living in Finland named Vladimir Hisankin, he has now compiled every study, clinical study, experiment, et cetera, on photobiomodulation into one massive, comprehensive, color-coded database that is indexable, searchable, publicly available online.
What's the name of it?
So the link is on our website. If you go to justlight.com and then scroll to the bottom of the page, there's a link that says database.
Okay.
And if you click that link, it'll take you to a Google spreadsheet that's called the Comprehensive Photobiomodulation Database. And in that database you can look for any disease that you or a loved one might have. And you'll probably be surprised to find that there's like dozens of studies on photobiomodulation for every specific disease. And so as of today, actually, Vladimir, who goes by Voltsu, messaged me today saying, I just added the 6,500th and first paper today.
And so
it's not 10 papers. It's not 100. It's 6,500.
Wow.
And these are from MIT to Harvard to Brazil to Russia to China, all over the world. And from everything from Alzheimer's to depression to osteoporosis to anxiety, plantar fasciitis, diabetic foot ulcers, diabetic neuropathy, everything you might imagine, anything characterized by degeneration, is going to have some form of study and inclusion in that database.
Wow.
And if it's not, it's probably in the other tab in the database, which is actively ongoing clinical trials, which he also indexes everything on.
Well, you know, I have to end this for right now, but can we get together again soon, very soon?
Absolutely. Yes, yes.
I love that. This is just the beginning, and I got some research to do.
Yeah, that database itself is one of the best things to dig through. And then additionally, the first link on our website, the very first image you see, it has a link that says A, and that link is the best systematic review for Alzheimer's specifically.
Okay.
And if you read that review, it'll both explain photobiomodulation, the primary mechanism in deep detail, and then explain all the clinicals that have already been completed that have shown safe and effective results. And that is what we base Sunflower's parameters on, is that systematic review.
Wow. Well, I'm going to have to say goodbye right now, but tell everybody who you are and where you are. We're going to talk to you hopefully in a few weeks, if I could do that.
Absolutely. My name is Peter Forehan. I'm the founder and CEO of Just Light, and that's justlight.com. And we are a public benefit corporation on a mission to revolutionize healthcare through universal access to photobiomodulation.
How exciting, Peter. I have so enjoyed this. My brain is just whirling, and I can hardly wait to get at the material.
Absolutely.
And let's talk again in a couple of weeks.
Please.
Okay. All right. I'm just really looking forward to keeping on learning. So we're going to talk to you very soon.
Great. Thanks for the time.
Bless you. Bye.